The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show post 4th of July weekend. I hope everyone had a great time. Man, Saturday was fabulous at my house. We had perfect weather, outstanding band, Cody Eichert and the Sidewinders. We had wonderful fireworks, wonderful crowd, wonderful food truck, and Uno Mas was there, probably 300 plus in attendance at least. Neighborhood was alive and well, and man, it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. So I hope you had as fun filled forth as I did, and the people that came to my place did, because it was a blast. All right, we're gonna have a great show today. I've got all kinds of stuff to talk about today. I always have a lot to talk about, but today maybe more than I normally have to talk about. We're gonna get Rod on in just a second because the CPI numbers came out today, and for June, and it was a little bit surprising. So we're gonna talk to him about that. I'm also gonna be talking about investing through index funds is more popular than ever, so why has it become so controversial? I've been talking on this topic for quite some time, and then later in the program as well, in 2025, I think it was 2025, I spoke at the Harvard Faculty Club on the retirement crisis in America and how to fix it. 9 years later, USA Today put an article out on the retirement savings crisis in America. So we're going to be talking that and more, so it's going to be a fun one. Let's do a little news from last week. Brought to you, of course, by Lance Like and the Like Law Group. Give yourself and the family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call my buddy Lance at Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. And Dirk Bland and Nikki Bland over at Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them. Just make it a habit. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. All right, let's talk about last week first. Stocks kind of steadily advanced over the holiday week thanks to strength in the mega cap tech issues and encouraging job data. S&P, NASDAQ, they were all up. We had the Dow up just a modest 0.66%. ADP's employment report on Wednesday showed private sector employers added 150,000 jobs in June, slightly slower than the pace in May, adding to hopes that a slowing economy might prompt the Fed to adjust short-term rates early as September, but we'll see. The NASDAQ, S&P hit their 23rd and 33rd record close, respectively, for the year. Friday's morning job report from the Labor Department showed 206,000 jobs were added last month, which also suggested a strong but cooling economy. News of slower job growth, slowing wage growth, and a slight uptick in unemployment helped drive down treasury yields. And that's important, right, for all of us that want to borrow money for things. And stocks finished the short week with a really strong rally. Again, the NASDAQ and S&P both closed at their all-time highs on Friday. Let's see, what did the 10-year close at here? It looks like 2 or 4.28. So it continues to go down. So driving much of this job growth in last week's report was a post-pandemic catch-up effect, they call it. Sectors such as healthcare, leisure, hospitality, they all showed they're still recovering some. The private sector job data and the Labor Department report painted a similar picture of an economy creating jobs but at a slower pace than in the past. So this week, we had Fed Chairman Powell speak on Tuesday. We had not a lot of stuff on Wednesday. But then today, Thursday, Consumer Price Index, jobless claims, and another couple people talking from the Fed. And then tomorrow we'll have wholesale inflation. That's on Friday. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Rod, because prices appeared to have fallen in June for the first time since the start of the pandemic. So it's crazy that we're actually starting to see this work. And I'll tell you, things are slow, man. I mean, I have friends in furniture, cars. Those particular are slow. you know, my son, who's over at Royal on the East Side, said, hey, come on over. The deals are there to be had. And he's digging it, but it's some long days when not a lot of people are walking through the doors. And I hear that from not just them, but also many, many other people that I stay in touch with. You know, a lot of things are slowing down. So we could get back. We'll get Rod's opinion of that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hot Rod Holloway joins me on the phone. Of course, contributor to Glass in the Afternoon on both Monday and Big Show Friday. And we've had a couple times where he hasn't been on just simply because Glass wasn't here. But here he is now with me. Going to talk a lot with what's been going on. So, Rod, before you came out, I talked about how Fed Chairman Powell spoke on Tuesday. We didn't have a lot of stuff on Wednesday. But today, on Thursday, we had some jobs reports. We had the big thing that everyone's always waiting on, the CPI report. Tell us what we learned from what we've heard this week.
Yeah, so far the CPI report came in month over month, negative 0.1%. Expectation was for it to be a positive 0.1%. So inflation is trending in the right direction, as the Fed was hoping they had alluded to that. It's been their belief that while we had the small hiccup of a few months of a slight uptick, that they thought that was just kind of a one-off thing, that it wasn't a reacceleration of inflation. And at least with this month's number, it confirms what they have been thinking, which from the market's perspective, because the market was slightly red in the pre-market trading, and that number came out at 8:30. It immediately flipped to green across the board in all three major indices, NASDAQ, S&P, and the Dow. And the reason for that is because if inflation continues to move in the correct direction, the market is feeling more and more likely of a rate cut coming in September. Now, I haven't seen since that inflation number come out this morning, I haven't seen what the probability is, but prior to it, the probability was over 70% that first rate cut was going to be September. I doubt that today caused that number to drop any, so it either stayed the same or possibly increased a little bit. But I think more importantly, whether it's September or not, I think what it is beginning to signal to us is that we can probably expect to see that we will see a Fed rate cut this year, partially because they do believe they're in restrictive territory, so it isn't a rate cut to stimulate the economy, which is typically what we think of rate cuts, but they believe they are in restrictive territory, and if they don't need to slow the economy down anymore, they'll want to slowly work their way back to neutral. Neutral, of course, is a constant moving target and always being adjusted on a regular basis, but you're probably looking at neutral somewhere closer to 3, 3.5, and here we are in that 5, 5.25 range.
You know, I was reading a commentary, I'm not sure who wrote it, but it said, it ain't over till it's over, words of wisdom from baseball legend Yogi Berra, and the words that Chairman Powell has been taking to heart, because he said inflation has eased over the past year, but remains elevated following the Fed's June meeting. In other words, it ain't over till it's over, but I think today's number certainly points in the direction of no future increases, which was being discussed by a few Fed members last month, that, hey, rate increases are still on the table.
Yeah, even as of last week, there was at least one member, I think it was Bauman, that had mentioned it. I read an interesting article, and it did make some sense to me in regards to that. They were saying that really the rate increase talk was potentially an offset to the market to not get overly excited too soon and get ahead of itself.
Rod, they would never do that. Come on.
Exactly. Well, you said it many a time that the Fed looks to get a response off of the words they use every bit as much as the actual actions that they take. So that's part of what went into it, which I thought, okay, that makes sense, because we do know that they do like to talk to the market and get a reaction out of it even before they take any action with that. And I think that's a lot more of what those rate increase talks were, is trying to downplay the enthusiasm and excitement of the market. Once again, rate decreases most certainly aren't a bad thing, but we don't need rate decreases exclusively to have a growing economy and a growing stock market. Obviously, things can accelerate growth-wise when you have lower borrowing rates and cheaper capital available to pursue those growth opportunities, but it is not required to grow at zero interest rates as the only way we can have a positive market.
You're starting to see some deals on cars, new cars, where they're offering the low financing from the manufacturers again. There's a lot of things are happening that makes me realize that, yeah, everyone's kind of feeling the slowdown right
yep.
now. Let's briefly talk about, because I know I have a segment after I let you go on investing through index funds is more popular than ever. So why has it become so controversial? And basically, you know, we're talking about how majority of your return has been driven by about, you know, eight companies or maybe 12. And but the Dow, you know, here it is just plugging and chugging along. And I've just really had a lot of I've read a lot of things of people predicting a long, long run and more of the value type investing over the maybe even the next decade or so. That indice, that broad indice of the industrials just hasn't seemed to keep up with the S&P at least.
Yeah, most certainly not. I mean, year-to-date numbers through yesterday's close, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 5.39% year-to-date. S&P 500, a little over 18%. The NASDAQ, 24%. So, yeah, to your point, it has been a big lagger in that regard. And part of it is because it only has a couple of those Big Ten names part of it. So the thing that's really been driving the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, the Dow Jones doesn't have full exposure to that. In addition to the Dow Jones probably does have a little greater allocation from a percent perspective to some value plays in there. Value has been out of favor. You know, value kind of picked itself back up a little bit coming out of the pandemic after we had that initial surge up of growth and especially things pandemic related to work at home and school at home and all of that. Coming out of it, you had a little bit of a catch up on the value, but that catch up trade ended pretty quickly. So yeah, I wouldn't disagree that there is opportunities in the value. And I think along those lines, you know, 2000 to 2010 is a good example to analyze and discuss that. 2000 to 2010, S&P 500 relatively flat over those 10 years. But look beneath the surface, there were all kinds of companies that did very well over those 10 years. So just because it didn't flow through to the S&P 500 index doesn't mean that there weren't individual companies and individual sectors within the S&P 500 that did do well over that 10-year span, even though the S&P as a whole was basically flat over that 10-year period.
So what I was going to talk about next, I'll just go ahead and talk about now. When you look at a evenly weighted index for the S&P, it's not up that much. I mean, if you said the big names that we all know are cap-weighted, so they drive the majority of the return, but the risk is this, folks, that if you own only S&P 500 and most of your return is driven by 8 or 12 companies, and when that flavor starts to go away, and it will at some point, you're going to see massive drops versus people that have a more plug-and-chug attitude, which has always been my attitude. You know, hey, let's just take good, consistent returns over time. Slow and steady wins the race. Yeah, we get excited when we have some of these big runs and these big in some of these certain companies, but Rod, I think people need to be careful because I believe the S&P 500 is the riskiest index to be in at this point.
Well, most certainly could be because, like you said, it is so heavily concentrated in tech and growth tech as far as what's really driving it up there. Now, to that point, those big boys are generating real revenue yeah. increases and real earnings increases. So they're still great quality companies to own. Will they continue to have outsized performance every single year? No, probably not. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other opportunities elsewhere to pair with that. I mean, the bulk of the phone calls I'm getting from a lot of financial firms, and obviously not every financial firm has this story to tell, but the ones that have it are calling up and telling the story, which is, hey, here's the type of performance we have so far this year over the last 3 years or 5 years or whatever it is, and we've done most of this without those Big Ten names in it.
Yeah.
You know, so to find that compliment of, oh, okay, hey, you're getting good performance without being beholden exclusively to the 10 biggest market cap companies within the index, and then you start pairing those together. Because like I said, I don't think you want to go run and hide away from those Big Ten boys, but if you bet exclusively only on them, there are going to come periods of time in which they underperform other areas within the market. Once again, broaden out some diversification without going crazy and over-diversifying. It's a fine line that you have to walk there.
I was looking at some old outlines from a couple of years ago when we had inflation cooking at like 9.1%. And one of my themes back then was, how do you fight inflation? Well, you own things that go up with inflation. So I said, like real estate, like stocks, you know, you have to own things. And that has obviously been a big part of this run. When you have, you know, whatever it is, inflation over the past 3 years, that's going to be priced into the prices. You also have demographics, man. You've got the peak of the boomers born around 60, 61. What are they doing right now? They're saving like crazy, right? So you have buyers every single day. And if a fund says, well, I'm an index fund and I have to buy this allocation every time the money flows in, it's more buyers than sellers. I mean, so you have a lot of factors going into what's driving this market. And, you know, and I'm not saying there's going to be a day reckoning, because you're completely right, Hot Rod, that these companies that are earning these revenues are great, but they're paying up hundreds of times earnings for some of these companies. And I'm like, man, there's got to be a lot of technology and proficiencies and other things to make these prices worth what they are, because you can look across the board and there's a lot of great companies that have great valuations. They're like, man, I'd buy that all day long. So it's a little bit of a wonky market right now. There's no doubt about it. But that's why we got you, Rod. Come on, explain a little bit and handle the heavy lifting down at the office. So we appreciate that very much. We will be listening to
that. And to that point, Dave, I think the other thing that you have to keep in mind, there is going to be a spillover effect. You know, whether it's AI, whether it's cloud computing, whether it's security within the cloud, there's a spillover. The AI is going to take an enormous amount of energy as you implement all of these AI chips in these data centers to start scouring the data, whether it be in the healthcare sector, looking at all of the research and trying to extrapolate and pull that up. You know, so there's a spillover effect in which you need to invest in the infrastructure of the energy produced inside of that. Well, nobody's really talking about that. Those sectors aren't taking off and growing, but at some point in time, you should start seeing the rewards of these other sectors that are going to have a spillover effect from the hot sectors within growth in their revenue and then eventually earnings on that. Will it be the same type of growth we've seen in a company like an NVIDIA? No, probably not. But that doesn't mean that NVIDIA, after having such a massive run-up, continues to go up, but at a much slower pace, and some of these other areas that haven't run up hardly at all begin to play a little bit of catch up, and at least in the short term have some outperformance off of that. Once again, why you want to balance things and not put all of your eggs in one basket, even if those are really nice eggs, which those big 10 companies are really nice eggs, but there are some very nice eggs outside of those 10 as well.
That's right. We're going to let you go, Rob. We'll listen to you on Friday. Big Show Friday with Glass in the Afternoon. Thanks for contributing as always, and I'll see you back at the ranch.
Sounds good. Have a great show, Dave.
All right, we're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, in 2015, I spoke at the Harvard Faculty Club on the retirement crisis in America that was looming. And now 9 years later, USA Today puts an article out on retirement savings crisis in America. We'll come back and talk about that and more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes, post-4th of July week. I hope you had a great one, as I did. Thank you again to Hot Rod jumping on and helping explain the madness of what worlds we live in, which is why we have a job, right? I love the craziness. I love complexity. And people say, man, why does it have to be so complicated? I'm like, I love it, man. It gives me a job. Yeah, so it is that way with everything, right? So anyway, if you haven't seen the video of me talking about the retirement crisis in America back in 2015, you should go to our website, cfci.us, and check it out. I think it's under its videos, but you can find it. It's pretty easy to find. It's 5 minutes long, kind of like a TED Talk, so to speak. There's a funny story behind that whole thing, and I'll briefly tell it to you because, you know, I didn't know what I was getting into. I signed up through, it was through CNN, and I was at an exit slot conference, and you had to qualify to go by being in media of some form, like I am, or different written books or whatever. And so I kind of qualified. And then you would go to this thing. You had to pay for yourself to go. And then everyone pretty much gave talks. Well, I was in group CNN something, I can't remember. And I, on the plane ride, it was after I was in a little office fishing tournament, on the plane ride, I started to put my outline together. And all I had was a little outline. And I get there, And I'm at the hotel that night, and I thought, well, I'll just grab something to eat and something to drink, and I'm starting to visit with some people, and I realize they're there for the same reason I'm there. And they're, like, all stressed out, and I'm like, I don't know. And he goes, well, did you not have a professional script writer review your stuff? And I'm, no. And they said, did you not submit it to CNN first to approve? I said, no. I must have ignored every email they sent. So I'm listening to these people, and these people are PhDs. There's, everybody. And I literally call my wife, and I'm like, all right, I might have gotten over my skis on this one. So that the good news is I don't know a single soul out here. So if I suck really bad, I'm just going to bury the hatchet and come back home. Well, here's what happened. I get up the next morning, get my suit on, just already determined I was going to ride with some other people there. And I get there, and I didn't even know much like what I was going to do, but I knew kind of what I wanted to say, and I just blurted it out. 5 minutes, there was a clock at the back of the wall for me to watch, and it actually turned out pretty good. I mean, I did say some things I wished I could get back, but once it was done, and I thought, well, we'll go with it. So we started sending this out to employers, employer groups to say, listen, this is a real issue, right? We've got a real savings problem in America, and I think as an paternalistic or maternalistic employer, we need to help your employees get on the right track. And it really helps stimulate some of our education that we do for different companies, mainly through Ivy Tech. So that was the genesis of it all. Well, here we are 9 years later, and the retirement savings crisis, why more Americans can't afford to stop working, article from USA Today came out. And it said, you know, retirement is increasingly becoming a luxury many Americans cannot afford. And my dad would tell you that retirement is not mentioned in the Bible, so there's nothing biblical about retirement. It's just a made-up thing that we decided to go with. Social Security pays less than half of the average wages and faces possibility of cuts. I don't know that'll happen. Doesn't stretch far enough. And older Americans have too little stowed away in 401ks and other savings to get by. In fact, only half of Americans' households have even retirement accounts, according to the Federal Survey of Consumer Finances. So I'm looking down at one of the quotes, and it says here, one in two people reaching retirement won't have enough, and one in four seniors are in poverty, measured by international standards. The retirement savings crisis in the United States is no longer looming. It's here now. That read in the first sentence of the report from the National Institute of Retirement Security. But what was cool is I went through and I'm reading a lot of this stuff and I'm like, my gosh, this is me. I've been talking about this for a while. Here's one that says, work, retire, repeat. The uncertainty of retirement in the new economy blames the retirement savings crisis on the switch to 401ks. These do-it-yourself pensions have a growing number of low and middle-income Americans, forcing them to work well into their 70s. And here's one. Larry Fink from BlackRock says, if you haven't figured it out by now, you're on your own. Approach has shifted Americans from financial certainty to financial insecurity. Of course, that's the move from pensions to defined benefit plans or defined contribution plans. We all knew this. It was going to happen. But the issues were, right, the boomers, many of them, weren't told until it was way, way late what they needed to do to prepare for retirement. And the reason is their parents, grandparents, they had pensions and Social Security. Those two things combined took care of them. They didn't have to have personal savings. And just like my folks who, you know, were the very earliest baby boomers, the people that are younger baby boomers, they got it figured out a little bit earlier because people are like, hey, you got to do this. And then the millennials, they're doing a great job saving. Why? Because their parents are like, hey, dude, you have a 401k. You need to start saving right away. You were broke before. You just stay broke, right? Get your 10% in or whatever and go, go, go. So I go on to read this article, and I'm like, Larry points out, 4 in 10 Americans don't have $400 in emergency savings to cover a car repair or a trip to the emergency room, let alone retirement savings. Maybe once a decade, the U.S., faces a problem so big and so urgent that government and corporate leaders stop business as usual. And he wrote back in March that America needs an organized, high-level effort to ensure the future generations can live out their final days with dignity. So I'm reading this article, and I'm like, man, this is the stuff I was talking about, because I said, if, you know, I'm all about personal responsibility, right? I'll take care of myself. I'll take care of my family. I'll take care of my community, right? I'll do that. But that's the way I'm wired. A lot of people, most people aren't wired that way. So my talk was, at that time in 15, was if they're not going to do it, we're going to have to make them do it. We need auto enrollments. We need auto escalators. We need auto investments. And a lot of that stuff has materialized, but not enough. It is proven over and over and over that people will generally not opt out of something that they're automatically opt into. And you can't say, well, we're going to put you in at 3% because that's the match. No, put them in at 10%, right? And make sure that when you're young, it goes to the Roth and let it rip. And I think that would be solve a big problem. Now, some would say, well, we need more government intervention. We need like Australia, or we need to be more like Ireland or I don't know, Switzerland. And I'm like, no, we don't have to be. We can still maintain our independence and our responsibility for ourselves, our families, and our communities. But we're going to have to force people to do some things, because if they don't, guess what? All of us that have saved and done the right things, guess who's going to pay for it all? And I mean all. So in my talk, I talk about, if we don't do this, you're going to pay for their food, where they live, the rehab for the knee replacement that you just paid for. I go through this whole talk and I'm like, man, this was like being a prophet back in 15. I'm not trying to, you know, ring my own horn here too much, but it's like, come on, guys, come on. We got to get to life here. But I think the millennials are doing a good job. We've got a real issue with some of the boomers not preparing, and that's forced them to work longer. But you know what? That's just the way it is. There's trade-offs. I always tell people whenever they say, well, that's not going to be enough money for me in retirement. I'm like, well, there's only two things we can do. Save more, work longer. Or, yeah, you can make more, but who wants to take a ton more risk with the chances that it won't go right? So it's very simple. Work longer, save more. You know, the investments will do what the investments do. And then if that's age 70, fine. If it's like my dad, 76, 77, fine. Even when dad retired from the bank, I can't wait to have him on in December for our annual powwow of the year he actually finally pulled the trigger on retirement from the bank. And he'll tell you, he just knew it was time. But you know what he's doing? Not sitting on his butt. He's got his real estate license fired back up, and he's already got a listing, and he's floating deals my way, and it's fun, you know, and he's reinvigorated and having a lot of fun. So, you know, and working a little bit longer into retirement, you wouldn't believe just 1 or 2 or 3 years longer how much better it makes everything. And that's why I love our planning software. It's called Money Guide Pro. We don't call it that. That's who it's powered by. But you can run these what-if scenarios and say, okay, what if I took Social Security here, my wife took it there, or I worked 1 year longer, or I decided to do a go-go, slow-go, no-go retirement approach, and I decided, okay, when I'm in my 85 range, I'm cool with Social Security and a little bit of money. I don't need a ton. But, you know, right now when I'm 67 to maybe 77 or 80, I want to go to Florida every year. I want to take my grandkids on a cruise. I want to do things. And that's called a go-go retirement, and I love it because I think a lot of people end up not doing all this stuff, and they regret it because all of a sudden you get to the point you have all this money and you don't feel like doing anything. So follow the money the way you follow your health and your feelings. So I like it because clients will say to me, hey, well, I'm thinking about this, or I'm thinking about that. And I'm thinking, well, let's run a what-if scenario. What if, and here's what, you know, here's what it is. And then you can make a, not just an emotional decision, but a math decision as well. And sometimes you have to put the two together to make a good decision. All right, when we take a break next, let's see what I want to talk about next. Oh, so this was pretty interesting. Julian, who is with First Eagle Global, the Frenchman that was on with us in the springtime, we talked about repatriation. We talked about bond vigilantes. And I don't know if you remember that, but you could go back and listen to the show. But it's basically ways that we can get out of the debt we're in but as a country, and how we did it once before. And then also how people could basically fight for change by being a bond vigilante. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. When I come back, it's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everybody. All right, we've talked about a lot already today. Hey, I did see this piece, which I thought was pretty interesting. Greece starts a 6-day working week for some industries. Greece has introduced a 6-day, and we always thought they were lazy, right? No, they're not. They're starting a 6-day work week. for certain industries in a bid to boost economic growth. New legislation, which came into effect at the start of July, allows employees to work up to 48 hours a week as opposed to 40. It only applies to businesses which operate on a 24-hour basis. I didn't realize that they didn't allow people to work past 40 hours. I don't know enough, so don't hold me to anything I'm telling you here. I'm just reading an article that came from the BBC, which probably knows a lot more than I do about Greek government. And the move by the Greek government is at odds with workplace culture elsewhere in Europe and the U.S., where a four-day working pattern has become more common. Well, that's interesting. I tried that this summer. I thought, you know what I'm going to do? Because my office runs really, really well when I'm not there. And it runs good when I'm there, but it runs really, really well when I'm not there. I just get out of their way. You got Rod on the investment team and Angela and the group on the service team, and it's fine. It works great. So I don't have to be there all the time, but I am. But this summer I thought, you know what? I'm gonna mark every Friday out, and I'm just going to either try to play some golf, go fishing, try to spend more time with friends, family, clients, whatever. And we are already past 4th of July, and I have not done any of that. So I am gonna, and I only did it for June. And I didn't do it at all, so it's too late for me to do it for July. So anyway, for me, I don't know what a four-day work week would even look like. I'm just not, again, wired that way. But it was kind of interesting when the Greece is trying to get more productivity out of people. That's the key, it says here. So just kind of looking here, it's pretty interesting little article. If you want a copy of it, I can get it to you. All right, so reparation. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but that basically was the way that we kind of got out of our major debt problem right after the war, World War II, and I did a piece on that already, but I'll briefly explain it to you again. We borrowed from the private insurance companies, gave them some favor, inflated the rest of our debt away, and got back to a reasonable debt-to-GDP ratio. That what happened. It's called reparation. You can look it up. Pretty fascinating. Don't think it would work in today's world at $35 trillion in debt, moving towards 50 faster than a locomotive. That's scary, right? And the good news is it's getting talked about a little bit. But here's the thing. Sometimes the government doesn't do anything until there's a crisis, right? That's why it's like, when are they going to fix Social Security? Well, when it's a crisis. And it's not yet a crisis, but it's getting closer and closer to being a crisis. It happened back in the early 80s with Reagan. It happened again a little bit in the 90s under Clinton. And it's probably going to have to happen under the next administration, whoever that may be. So whether it's President Biden or former President Trump or someone else, right, we don't really know, occupying the White House in 2025, may have to worry about bond vigilantes. Bond vigilantes are traitors that will use or threaten to use the bond market to protest the government's spending or its inaction on the deficit. They can sell their bonds, forcing interest rates to rise and making it more expensive for the bond issuer to borrow. So with the U.S. deficit on the rise, whoever wins in November may have to worry about investors attempting to force the government to do something about it. Now, remember this happened with some stocks, right? Where they, I've read it or something, I don't even remember, came in and started like buying them. It was crazy, and you know, people, they can do this. They can do it. Wells Fargo Investment Institute of Global Fixed Income explains that given the amount of outstanding debt, and this is total debt, this isn't just U.S. debt, the amount of the deficit that's projected, it can pretty much tell you that there's going to be some sort of reaction from bonds. And I've been saying this for a while, that the U.S. debt, when we have an auction of 20 and 30-year bonds, isn't going that great, right? But they'll sell the tar out of two-year bonds, but you know, 20-year, a lot of the big banks are having to take some of it back. So I may already be happy. I don't know. So since I brought up the deficit, I want to talk about the debate a couple nights ago. Both candidates were asked about the deficit, and there wasn't a lot of clarity about the extent to which they're going to address it in terms of actionable policies moving forward. I mean, I think about it this way. Most of our money that comes in is spent on four things: Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt. Very little is discretionary spending, so hopefully there's a lot of people a lot smarter than I am to figure this thing out. So I'm always curious from your perspective, and you, if you look at it, I mean, you know that the fixed income space in particular, I think there could be a likelihood of some bond vigilantes to force the government's hand to do something about it, to force people to deal with the deficit. And this would be after November sometime. I would say there is, I would say at this point in time, the amount of outstanding debt, the amount of the deficits, and the projected deficits that we've got recent projections from the CBO, which we never listen to, by the way, but they always come out and tell us, pretty much tell you it's going to be some kind of reaction from bonds. Like I said, looking at the, just a very simple equation, you're like, someone's going to force the hand of them to do something. So don't be surprised if a year from now, 6 months from now, we start seeing the bond vigilantes come out. And what does that mean for you? Well, if it drives up interest rates, it slows everything down, right? Everything. Your bond values go down. Your stock values go down. It becomes like a train wreck. But if that's what it takes to get the government to pay attention. And I thought that the moderators of the debate, although it's commonly known now that, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to go down that path, but that I thought they were pretty fair, and I thought they did a pretty darn good job. And I can't always say that with most of the moderators that I've seen over the years, whether they're on CNN or Fox, it doesn't really seem to make any difference. But I was glad they asked the question, right? But the answers were pretty bleh, like, well, you know, I just don't think anybody wants to deal with it because it's bad. And if you start to deal with it, it's going to be nasty and ugly, and people are going to hate you. But then guess what? The generations behind you will look back in history and say, man, that was one tough sucker, and he did it, and he took it on the chin for it, politically, personally, whatever. But look what kind of shape we're in today. I don't know how to fix the problem. I just know that we have one thing that we can control, and I am broken record, and I know I'm a Rothaholic, but it's this. I can control when I'm going to pay the tax on my IRA, 401k, and I'm choosing now and next year, and then we'll see where we go from there. All right, I'm going to take another break, come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, we're teeing up another question and answer show. We always have bunches of questions, but if you have one, please email us. Email Jimmy Inman at cfci.us and just contact us. It will get to him and ask us a question. We love answering questions. I love talking to people. I'll call you at night if I have to get more clarity. And people are sometimes amazed that I do that, but you know, they're like, I can't believe you actually called me. I'm like, well, yeah, I know it's 8 o'clock at night, but this is when I had time to call. So anyway, I was doing a little bit more research on this idea. So people are like, okay, again, the IRS will tell us how much of it is theirs, when we have to take it out, and all that. So, right, that's the minimum distribution. So whether it's 73 for you or 75 if you're born after 1960, remember I did a whole piece on why age 75 on my podcast. But I just feel more and more confident that this could happen. That right now we all use a table called the uniform table. And it assumes you have a spouse 10 years younger. It doesn't matter if you're married or not. So they take your balance at age 73 and divide it by 26.5. So they certainly don't think we're going to live 26.5 years. But if you have a spouse 10 years younger, you do. But with this, a stroke of a pen, they could say, you know what? We're going to flip it from the uniform to the single life. And if they do single life at age 73, they divide your balance by 16.4, not 27 or whatever. And what does that mean? That means a lot more money has to be spit out. And then by the time you're 80, they divide it by 11. That's like over, like that's a lot of money that they're going to push out. So my prediction is that will happen, because when they look at this mess and they say, listen, we may have $50 to $80 trillion in tax-deferred retirement accounts by the time the peak of the baby boomers hit age 75. And at that point, they have to start taking money out of the retirement accounts. And now it's 40% more than what they had anticipated. And many people don't even know what it's going to be. Like, most people are like, oh, what age do I have to take it? 70 and a half. No, 73 now. Oh, I'm born in 60. No, I'm 75. Oh, okay. And then when it gets time to take it, they'll say, how much is it? Oh, it's $10,000. Well, that stinks. They would say if it's $5,000 or $50,000, they don't even know. So get ahead of this quickly. If you're moving towards that magical age of RMD age and start pushing some of this income forward, getting those IRAs smaller, because I think And again, this isn't a show of conspiracy theories. This is just a show that I'm doing today on math and reality and practicality, that they could easily switch the table that you use to calculate your required minimum distributions from the uniform to the single, and all of a sudden, by the time you're 90 years old, they divide it by 5.7. And that's a lot of money that's being spit out to them. Now, guess what? A Roth IRA, is it subject to required distributions? No. Do your inherited people that get it have to pay or take RMDs? No. Does it all grow tax-free? Yes. Can they leave it in there for another 10 years? Yes. So there's so many check the boxes on the Roth side, it's ridiculous. So, and here's the thing. I know I'm preaching to the choir, because all of you that listen to this program, you're drinking from the same Kool-Aid bottle that I'm drinking from. I know, because you wouldn't be listening if you didn't. You turn it off and move on to someone else who is talking nonsense. But this is reality. It's math, and I'm just telling you, it can happen. Anything can happen. Look how they switched Social Security rules on us. That was just like, bang. Oh, you can't do this anymore? You can't do that anymore? That just happened like that. I mean, we had 3 months to adjust to old claiming strategies to the new very few claiming strategies. So it can happen. It can happen quick, and you won't even know it happened to you. All right. Hate to be a downer. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to come back and wrap this thing up on a positive note. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Let's talk about puppies. Right? Everyone loves puppies. I have a puppy. She's 5 months old. She is a Springer Spaniel, a roan, they call her. We have now three Springer Spaniels. We have one named Hunter that will be 18 years old next month. He is geriatric to the finest. We have Ruger, which is 5 years old. And we have Gracie Jane, named after my mom. And she is 5 months old. So we have a heck of a stable of dogs at our house, and I just thought I'd end up talking about puppy dogs, because if we talked about taxes anymore, I'd be sick of myself talking through that. So, again, I hope everyone had a fantastic 4th of July. I'm excited just to be in town the rest of this month of July, not traveling or doing anything, just going to dig in and make it happen. So I hope everyone has a great rest of the week, great weekend. And I'll talk to you again next Thursday night, okay? Or Saturday morning if you missed it, WGCORadio.com. Or, of course, after the Thursday night airing, if you like to listen to it with your favorite podcast, you can pick it up there as well. I encourage you to do that. Go subscribe to it, and you get a little alert, and you can listen to it in the car when you're just moseying around, or whenever you feel like it. So, again, have a great one, everyone. I'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.